Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journeys. I'm very pleased today to welcome Randy Painter to the podcast. Randy is a leader in the field of online advocacy and is founder and chief executive officer of Care2 and the Petition site. Randy launched Care2 in 1998 to empower individuals to take collective action in support of social and environmental causes. It was one of the first online social ventures, innovating an engine for good model where good actions generate revenues that help fuel more good actions. Care2 has recruited more than 30 million donors and advocates for 1,000 non-profit organizations. So thank you very much, Randy, for taking the time today to speak to inspiring social entrepreneurs.
Of course, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Great. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you and finding out more about Care2 and some of the great work you've been doing. A good place to start, maybe get a little bit of a sense of how you ended up in this whole world of social entrepreneurship.
Sure. Well, actually, it started out, my father was an ornithologist, and when I was 11, I was actually on the Amazon with him looking at birds. And I noticed that the trees had been cut down, and the deforestation, even back in the late 70s when this was quite evident. And it concerned me that if this was kind of the future, if this was what progress was all about, then the world was in trouble. So I kind of, at that point, I guess, decided that I wanted to do something about it. And it took me a number of years to actually start to kind of fulfill that ambition. But fast forward to 1995, I just graduated from business school, and I happened to be kind of in the heart of Silicon Valley. And a lot was going on at that time regarding the internet. And I started one of the first kind of viral apps, which was eCards.com, which was an electronic greeting card site with a couple of my friends. And so we learned a lot about viral marketing, and I ended up using that kind of insight. Eventually, my partner bought me out and ended up using that money to start Care2 and kind of finally pursue that passion of helping to engage people in making the world a better place.
Great. So when did you set up Care2?
So we started actually in 1998, so about 20 years old.
Right. Were there even social entrepreneurs then, Randy?
Well, you know, it's funny. Back in 1998, when I started Care2, we didn't call ourselves social entrepreneurs. We were more interested in and focused on kind of socially responsible business at the time. And there were some great pioneers out there who were inspirations to me, such as Anita Roddick, who started the Body Shop, and Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and there were some others out there as well. And a lot of these entrepreneurs were focused on creating a sustainable workplace and making sure that their products were made of environmentally responsible sourced products. And it wasn't necessarily that the business itself was producing a product that made the world a better place. And so one of the big changes that I've seen is that more and more now, social entrepreneurs want to have their product itself be socially and environmentally responsible, not just the ways that they practice business. And so that's been one of the cores of Care2, is let's make sure that the business that we're doing creates more good in the world as we generate more revenues.
Yes. Can you talk a little bit about what your initial vision for Care2 was and how you thought about it in terms of, being an NGO, which it isn't, but, profit-making or non-profit-making in the business model, and how you kind of conceived of that at the outset?
Sure. So from the outset, my vision was to harness the power of markets to make the world a better place. It was using a for-profit model, which is really kind of probably better termed a for-benefit model. And it wasn't about I didn't want it to be a nonprofit organization. I wanted it to kind of to leverage markets and those the forces of the markets to kind of force us to do more good. And so I was very keen on creating what I call an engine for good, so that the more good we do, the more money we make, the more money we make, the more good we do. So basically, we use that fuel of doing good to kind of create, to kind of power the engine and to create more benefit in the world. And that alignment of the mission and the margin was, you know, absolutely key to the model, and is something that I'm very pleased with, that I feel like we've accomplished that. And so the basic way that that works is that there are two aspects of Care 2. We have a kind of a consumer-facing side of it, where we empower individuals to start petitions and support each other's petition campaigns and have direct impact on the world through their petition campaigns. And then simultaneously, we're helping nonprofit organizations to become more effective and efficient in terms of recruiting donor prospects. And so basically, they pay us to recruit new donors for them. And because we are a better solution than anything else that they can find out there, we end up helping them to save money and focus, you know, put more of that money to work on doing good in the world. So basically, so the more good we do, the more money we make, the more money we make, the more good we do.
And was that your initial concept, or did you have a few goes, a few different versions of the idea to get there?
Yeah, we actually had a few. I guess it's been a long evolution. We've always had that model of being focused on margin and mission and helping kind of making sure that the product was aligned with the margin. That said, the actual concept of recruiting donor prospects, you know, didn't even exist back in 1998 when we started. And it was something that the initial focus was really actually on, I was going to have advertising and green e-commerce was actually the initial idea for how we were going to kind of fund the business. And it turns out that neither one of those was such a great idea, particularly back in 1998. And so we kind of pivoted early on to focus on nonprofits. We happened to have one of our employees used to work at a nonprofit organization, had some contacts there. We ended up doing a newsletter on behalf of that, sending out a newsletter on behalf of that nonprofit organization. And we're really actually, this was actually in late 2000 when we were pretty much desperate when the kind of dot-com crash was happening. And so we quickly realized that the members that were using Care 2 were of great value to the nonprofit organizations. And so we figured, there's something here. So we ended up basically creating this model where, rather than asking people for a donation every single time they came to visit the site, we would instead enable them and empower them to make a positive impact through online petitions primarily, and other ways as well, and then use that as a vehicle to then engage them with the nonprofit organization kind of in a matchmaking way, so they could then join the nonprofit and do more good with that nonprofit directly.
Right. That's very interesting. Can you give me an example how that might work for a particular nonprofit in terms of this sourcing of leads and so forth?
Sure. So we work with over 2,000 nonprofit organizations, pretty much all of the major organizations that are membership-based that are, I would say, center to left of center politically, and interested basically in making the world a kinder, more inclusive, and sustainable space is the way we say it. And so an organization will come to us and say, I need to recruit 100,000 donor prospects, and we will help them to craft a campaign. We've got a team of experienced campaigners on our side that work with the nonprofit directly to craft a campaign that is going to find entice those donor prospects from among our members to join the nonprofit organization's list. So we'll run that campaign on our site, and generally the way that works is we'll send out a newsletter, or perhaps someone is signing a petition on our site from a friend, or maybe some hyper-specific or hyper-local kind of type of topic. We'll then show them a promoted petition, If they opt to receive more information from that organization, then we will pass their information on to the organization. So it's all permission-based, and we end up, the organization will basically end up paying us for the predetermined 50,000 leads that we've contracted with them in the beginning.
Great, great. And the world has changed a lot since then, hasn't it? And this online advocacy and petitions, there's a proliferation of online activism of this kind. How is that going? You were there at the outset before probably it had really taken root.
Yeah, well, so it's changed a lot. We were definitely very early to market, and in some ways kind of too early, I think, which has created some challenges for us along the way. But it one of the really exciting things from my perspective is that while online activism was really in its infancy when we started back in 98, it's come so far, and it's just become such an incredibly powerful force and so important to create social change. So now that with everybody with their mobile phone, and there's so many simple ways to take action online today, that we have a much more engaged population, and so many more people are participating, which is creating so much more transparency and accountability. And that is kind of inevitably pushing organizations, businesses, governments to be held more accountable and kind of forcing them to what I think is a more sustainable and more inclusive model. Now, there are some hiccups along the way. It doesn't always go smoothly. It's not always a kind of a linear path up and to the right. It is something that there are fits and starts to it. But, all in all, I'm very optimistic that with all of this transparency and engagement, we're on a great path.
What are a couple of examples you'd point to? And I know you mentioned the permission basis of the work that you're doing, and there are questions about technology companies and data and so forth. But I guess also it's good to know that the way that you've got that kind of as a basis. I'm just also interested in the question of, and I know this has come up a little bit, there's been a couple of books about this recently, but this kind of e-activism questioning, how far can it go, or to what extent is it channeling people's energy and they're not going out and creating other kinds of change, and is it kind of wearing off? I mean, if you get a very high level picture of before we go back to some more of the dynamics of building the organization.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I think it's very important that people realize that the actions that they're taking online are making a positive impact. And so, we're fortunate to have a great team here that really works directly with individuals who are starting petitions on our site. And so we have lots of real world kind of case studies of impact. So, for example, Starbucks recently announced that they're going to get rid of plastic straws. Well, that campaign actually started when an individual employee from Starbucks started a Care 2 petition, ended up getting over 100,000 people signing it, kind of put pressure on the company and forced them to kind of get rid of their plastic straws. It's one small step towards greater sustainability, but it's kind of an example of how signing an online petition can actually make real impact. So I'm a huge believer in the kind of just helping everybody to take simple actions and realize that their vote, their action matters. And so basically I think there's been a misunderstanding of kind of the way that maybe human motivation works in terms of activism, because it's not that people who take, click online are less likely to do other good offline or donate or vote more kind of in a more responsible way. It's really that there's a positive feedback there that helps to cement kind of one's personal perception of oneself. And so the more actions we take to, let's say, support animal welfare, online, the more likely we are to think of ourselves as an animal welfare advocate, which makes us more likely to talk to our friends about animal welfare, or maybe even read more stories about that and share them, or maybe vote for candidates that might be, you know, supportive of animal welfare, and or, you know, buy products that are not harming animals. So these simple first, these are often the first step. But the whole concept here is about engagement, about helping people to take action and feel good about those actions so that they'll be inspired to do more. It's not a replacement doing more.
Yeah, no, I've read research about how people getting a sticker in their window and so forth, and therefore they start a small step and but yet can make a substantial difference. Before moving on, just one last question, if I may. What kind of campaigns work best?
Well,
big question. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, there are all sorts of campaigns that can work well. I think part of it is about campaigns that are particularly kind of hyper local or hyper specific are probably the easiest ones to point to, that where you can see that a petition is kind of the causal kind of factor in creating the actual impact. So maybe a board, maybe a local school board. Maybe let's say the students at we've actually seen a number of these types of petitions where students at a school are concerned about a dress code where girls are singled out for, let's say, exposing their shoulders, at school. And so there have been multiple campaigns where they've been able to say, you know, this is sexist, this is not right. We should be able to expose our shoulders in school. And, you know, lo and behold, the school boards are often very, very willing to change those rules because they're getting direct feedback from their community in a very local and kind of specific way. And so those are kind of the easiest ones pointing, like, there was no other campaign outside of the petition, and that made the impact. That said, I actually believe petitions can have be a part of the overall ecosystem in all sorts of types of social change out there, that where you can't say that the petition was the only factor, but it was part of the overall solution. And so, we see that in the election of officials. We see that in all sorts of a variety of campaigns that sometimes take more than a week or two to actually kind of come to fruition. And so the other key here is keys are emotion. The more emotional the campaign is, the more it will resonate, the more it will spread, the more likely it is to have an impact. And then also in terms of the targets, businesses tend to be very responsive to petitions because they realize that there are real dollars at stake and that they need to respond or they're going to lose customers or lose money, and so they tend to be quite cautious and careful when they are when there's a petition that is going up against a company.
Fascinating. Lots of more questions I could ask you there. It's a rich territory. Looking at Care2 itself, what's the scope of your activity today, and can you maybe kind of highlight a couple of steps along the way in your growth?
Sure. So when you say the scope of our activity, are you talking about the types of business services that we provide, or what can you find out?
The number of employees, the scale of the organization, the turnover, or just the kind of key kind of variables like that.
Got it. So Care2 is a private company, so we don't release our revenue numbers, but I'll say we're doing in the seven digits in terms of dollars, in terms of revenue. We are about 70 employees. The majority of them are in the United States, but we have a handful in the UK and Australia. And so we're really focused on providing, donor acquisition for nonprofit organizations, as well as helping mission-aligned brands to acquire more customers as well.
Right, right. What are a few key steps along the way? You've talked about the evolution of the business model. Timing is an important factor there, just the way things evolve. Looking back now, can you maybe identify a few key steps in the development of the organization?
Sure. Probably some of the most important factors have been kind of external, kind of economic factors, I think, that have kind of forced the company to kind of move in a direction that is more sustainable. So when we started out, I mentioned before that we had been focused on green e-commerce and advertising, and the economics weren't working out. This was the initial dot-com implosion in 2000. And so we were kind of forced at that point, out of desperation really, to change our business model and find a business model that was going to be more productive. I'd say kind of one of the next big change that we've seen has been really with the growth of Facebook and Google. And this is really kind of created a significant challenge for nonprofit organizations. So years ago, nonprofits, traditionally in the United States, most nonprofit organizations have recruited new donor prospects from direct mail and sometimes via phone. But direct mail has been kind of the big area that they've been focused on. What's happened is that due to the growth of the internet primarily, people are not responding nearly in the same levels that they used to via direct mail. And so organizations are being forced to move online. And what initially, in the kind of the good old days of the internet, they were able to do a lot of direct and kind of viral growth, not nonprofit organizations were. What then happened was Facebook and Google kind of rose into such a powerful position, and particularly, I'd say, Facebook, because people generally aren't searching for, you know, how do I donate to this particular cause? So they generally need to be kind of interrupted. And so the best, kind of one of the best areas for that is on Facebook. And because Facebook and Google are so powerful these days, they really clamp down on the ability for organizations to get direct traffic and to share virally and to get kind of viral growth. So it's really they're forcing this pay-to-play environment. And the challenge is that when it comes to pay-to-play on Facebook, there's only one feed that is for everything on that the individual will consume when they're looking at their Facebook newsfeed. And so organizations that used to basically compete in direct mail, and maybe they were competing against a couple of other direct mail pieces in a day whenever that direct mail piece arrived in someone's mailbox. These days, they're not competing just against every other nonprofit organization. They're also competing against, you know, every individual's fundraising campaign, as well as, you know, every cute cat video, every personal update, every commercial post. They're competing for attention with everything in the world in that one newsfeed, which is really, really difficult for any individual organization to do effectively. They're just that they're. Lots of great things that nonprofits do, but it's really hard for them to compete at that level for attention. And so that shift in the market has really kind of been a major challenge for nonprofits, and that's kind of where Care2 has been able to step in and provide a great solution for them, because we have the scale and the expertise to recruit donors much more effectively than the organizations can do. That's really created the big opportunity for us, and kind of why we've really accelerated in growth. We had the end of Q4, Q4 is generally our biggest quarter of the year, but we grew 83% year over year. So definitely been really taking off as a result of these kind of changes in the environment.
Yes. How much of that is driven by the needs of the nonprofits, and how much of it is driven by the a multitude of factors, including the political climate, the state of the dramatic challenges that we're facing at the moment, the people's awareness and feeling of needing to be part of the change?
Yeah, I think they're both important factors. There's clearly. I'd say from a revenue perspective for Care2, The change has primarily been, I think, through demand from the nonprofit organizations, kind of realizing that they aren't able to recruit enough donor prospects on their own. That's kind of the primary kind of the driver of revenue growth for Care2. But we've certainly seen an increase in general activism. But honestly, we've been seeing an increase in general activism for many, many years. And so it's not... even though there have been spikes along the way, you know, we have the Trump bump in the United States here in the spring of 2016. There's been so I think that there continues to be a growth in activism, but I would say that primarily it's the nonprofit demand that's really been spiking recently.
To what extent, it seems like a two-legged business model in a sense. To what extent are there tensions between the different goals, the different parts of the business?
Yeah, that's a good question. We generally aren't seeing a whole lot of tension there, I guess. I think we've been really careful to try to create a complementary model. We know that the only way that we are going to continue to grow is to provide exceptional value to the nonprofit organizations, and then also provide exceptional value to the individuals that use our site. And so we're very careful in how we treat both of those. And that if we are trying to recruit, you know, low quality kind of, you know, people that are not going to convert for a particular nonprofit organization, then that nonprofit's not going to come back to us. And so the better we can create that match between the individual and the nonprofit organization, the happier both parties are going to be. And so I think there's very much of an aligned incentive there to understand both what the nonprofit is looking for and also understand what the individual is looking for to make that connection the best it can possibly be.
Very interesting. Now, increasingly, you see, and it's one of the, I guess, distinctive qualities of social entrepreneurship, is you see people coming from mainstream business into social business, social entrepreneurship, and that's something that you had the experience of. Are there any insights you have in terms of how the challenge is different?
Well, I think the challenge has been, so initially when I first started out, one of the biggest challenges that I faced was raising money, because there are, in general, investors wear one of two hats. They either wear their donation hat and they are going to make a donation to a nonprofit organization to do good in the world, or they're going to wear their investment hat and they are going to invest in the next, you know, Facebook or Google and try to make as much money as possible. And it's often difficult for them to believe that they can actually invest in a company that is going to do good and help to make them money at the same time. And so that was my initial challenge. And I think that has, you know, there have been enough examples in the world of companies that have actually done well, such as Tom's or Ben & Jerry's or Body Shop or Etsy and other kind of leading social entrepreneurial companies that have been successful. So I think that's less of a struggle these days, but I think that is still a challenge that social entrepreneurs face. I think once we can't take the gloves off, let's say, and kind of do everything that maybe some for-profit companies are willing to do, but from my perspective, at the end of the day, that's just simply a good thing for shareholder value, because the more we stay true to our mission, the more our clients are going to like us and the more the individual members are going to like us. And so I don't actually, at the end of the day, see that there's some maybe short-term wins that we will miss out on, but we're not really focused on the short term. We're really focused on kind of how do we make this a win-win for everybody in the long run. And so I think that ends up actually working in our favor that we are socially responsible. It's also a great thing for employees. We've got a great team who've been with us. We've got probably the most experienced team when it comes to donor acquisition anywhere. Many of our executive team have been with us for 10 or more years. We've got really experienced campaign team. People have seen, you know, our employees have seen just a tremendous amount of campaigns from a whole variety of nonprofit organizations as well as individuals. So, and they love what they do because they're seeing that they're making a real impact. So I think it actually helped with employee retention as well. So I see it more as a positive than I do kind of a challenge. Now that we've gotten funding and are kind of long since kind of created a sustainable business model here.
Fascinating. Do you think about when you set up the Care 2 and how it's evolved over time? What are the key areas do you think these are the areas we have to excel in and really be the best at?
Yeah, no, great question. We are obsessive about creating, basically acquiring donor prospects, quality donor prospects for our nonprofit clients. And that's like, if we're going to be the best at anything in the world, it has to be that. And, at the end of the day, nonprofits are paying the bills, and they're only paying the bills because we're more effective and efficient than anywhere else that they can go. And so that's one thing that I think we've really probably evolved more than anything over time, is to become super focused on making sure that they get real value out of the donor prospects that we're acquiring.
Yes, absolutely. Now, looking forward, what are your plans for the business?
Well, we feel like we're barely touching the tip of the iceberg here. So the nonprofits spend about $13 billion annually in the United States alone in direct mail and kind of communications to acquire new donor prospects. It's a huge, huge business. And 90% of that is still offline today. So we barely, touched the tip of the iceberg here. There's so much more opportunity. And so I think, our plan is just to stay really focused on providing exceptional value to our clients, making sure that what we provide them is exactly what they need. And if we do that really well, there's a very bright future for us. And so that's what we're focused on. We're not planning on going broad or trying new kind of new approaches. We feel like we're doing something well, and we want to be the best in the world at what we do.
Fascinating. What would you say to a nonprofit that's embedded, that's been doing direct mail for a long time? It's not as effective as before, but they know what they're doing. They're getting some results. How would you convince them that to consider Care 2?
Well, it's funny. I actually don't think, generally, we don't need to convince them that they need to shift from direct mail because that it's an aging population and the number of donor prospects that they're acquiring through direct mail is really been plunging. It's actually still a good model for them to retain and kind of get additional donations from individuals who have already donated, but it's not a good source for finding new donors. So I think that part of it is relatively easy. That said, they're still doing as much as they can through direct mail, kind of to get as much as they can from the channel that they know best. But they can see the writing on the wall, and so they're beginning to move faster and faster online. Where Care 2 really excels is that we make it simple for them to get kind of predictable, high quality results that they're not going to be able to get elsewhere. So if they try direct or viral means, the results are very unpredictable. It's often very expensive to run those campaigns in-house. With Facebook, you kind of have similar challenges that initially, and we actually recommend that our clients also kind of run some Facebook campaigns and try to convert donor prospects to donors via Facebook, because we are living in a multi-channel world, and so they need to take a multi-channel approach. And so, but what they often find is that you can't scale on Facebook. You can get initially some very attractive donor prospects initially, but it's really hard to scale that because of the challenges I mentioned before, where they're competing against everybody under the sun. And so we can guarantee results. We guarantee, we can collect millions of leads. Actually, we've recruited over 90 million donor prospects for nonprofit organizations. So we can really scale it up in a very kind of predictable and consistent way for our clients, that where they know that they're going to get exactly what they expect when they work with us. And we have a very experienced campaign team that will work with them to make sure that we optimize the results. We'll do analysis with them to make sure that their campaign went well and to understand what's working and what maybe needs to be improved next time. And so I think there's nobody else out there who provides the kind of the depth of service that we do. And so I think that's generally, we make it simple and predictable, which is great for nonprofit organizations because, you know, at the end of the day, they need donors to survive. And so we help them to build their donor base.
Fascinating. One last question there, maybe, perhaps. What are the variables that they look at? What are the metrics, the cost of the donor prospect, the responsiveness of the donor prospect? Can you maybe give a couple of examples and maybe how it would compare with traditional direct mail?
Right. So direct mail, the benchmark is, it's interesting that they expect, most organizations expect a payback from direct mail in about 12 to 18 months, which is kind of surprisingly long, I think, from a lot of people's perspective. But it's a fairly long payback. With online, they generally are looking at ROI, so return on investment, the how quickly they can get paid back for the amount of money that they spend, and what is the total amount of value that they're getting from that spend. And so with Care 2, they're generally seeing return on investment. It depends on the organization. Some are more effective at this than others for a whole variety of reasons. But it may be a few months to maybe upwards of 9 months to a year for various organizations, but it's a lot faster than it is via direct mail. And then over time, what they see is that these prospects keep on giving and giving and giving. And so we've had clients for 10 years or more that are still finding new donors coming from some of the leads that we acquired for them many years previously. So over the lifetime value of the leads is really exceptional from Care 2. We find we've got very, very active members that are very passionate, very engaged, and frankly, they donate a lot to organizations.
That's fascinating. Now, the way you present it and the clarity, the development of the ideas, the business models, and so forth, it seems very clear. Yet, I know that to build an organization like this takes a tremendous commitment and drive and persistence. What keeps you going? What keeps you inspired?
Well, yeah, it has been a real evolution, I'd say, over the years. So, I'd say what, interestingly, my motivations actually, or aspirations, I'll say, really haven't changed that much, since I was 11 years old, since I first kind of got that kind of bug in me to want to make the world a better place, because there is so much that needs to be done. And I, it is so evident to me that the more people that are involved, and the more people that see that their involvement is doing good, the better the world is going to be. So we're really, our goal is to create a kinder, more inclusive, and sustainable world. And we're only going to get there if more people get out there and vote, more people move, put their dollar, use their dollars more effectively, and are taking action to support organizations and the kind of efforts that it's going to take to make the world a better place. So we see ourselves as a catalyst to engaging, especially the progressive world, I'll say, in helping to realize the benefits of being involved. And so that's really what motivates me, that I can see that we're making a real impact. We're actually having an impact both today as well as kind of building that movement that is going to end with this better, more sustainable, and more inclusive world.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck, the very best of success with your vision and building this movement. And thank you so much for sharing your experience, your insights, and all the great work you've been doing.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.